How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 97 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder, and you can subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review also once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Thunder just beat the Pelicans on Sunday night, recording this late on Sunday as always. Thunder just beat the Pelicans 101-92. Now 13-8 on the year, 5 wins in a row, 5 straight triple-doubles for Russell Westbrook, first 5-game triple-double streak for any player in the league since Michael Jordan in 1989. Here's a crazy stat. Jordan did it for 7 straight games in 89, from like end of March into beginning of April in 1989. He broke it with a game where he had 40 points, 11 assists, and 7 rebounds, which is obviously nuts. And then after that game, he had 3 more consecutive games of a triple-double. So Jordan actually had a triple-double in 10 out of 11 games, which is just crazy. Like, Michael Jordan was a good basketball player. That is nuts. I was writing, here's confession time. I was writing like this Jordan stat in the notes for the paper. There's like this thing I have to introduce because it's our style. I have to introduce, and every paper has a style. I have to introduce the players with, you know, I have to say Thunder center Enes Kanter, or, you know, Pelicans big man Anthony Davis, or whatever it is. So I wrote it, and I said it was the first time since Chicago Bulls guard Michael Jordan did it. I was like, that is so weird. Like, do you think there will literally be one person who reads that article who doesn't know who Michael Jordan is? And if they don't know who Michael Jordan is, do you think there's a decent chance, do you think there's any chance that the qualifier or the descriptor Chicago Bulls guard is really going to help them in that scenario? That was like, it sounds so awkward, and I just dropped it. I was like, you know what? I'm creating the exception here. I broke style tonight, guys. Don't tell anybody. We'll keep that between us. Anyway, 27, 17, and 12 for Westbrook. 10 turnovers, too. So we had the Westbrookian quadruple-double. That's his first Westbrookian quadruple-double on the season, I think. Kanter, 17 points, 10 boards off the bench. Anthony Davis at 37 and 15. He's nuts, man. He is so good. Like, he was taking the shot. Like, the Thunder defended him pretty well. I'll talk about this later in the show. He was taking the shots the Thunder wanted him taking. And he was still just making everything. He's crazy. Buddy Hield, return game to Oklahoma, 16 points, 15 minutes. All of his points came in the second half. Shot 6 of 11 from the field in the second half. 1 point in the game, Buddy Hield was 4 for 8 from the field. He had 4 made shots and 4 air balls. And those were his 8 shots. Weird game from Hield, but I mean, look, he was productive. 16 points, an efficient 16 points in 15 minutes on the night. 16 in about 13 and a half minutes in the second half. He didn't even come in till about a minute and a half left in the first half altogether. That was the first time he entered the game. Kind of a weird game for him, but he was definitely productive. Probably his best game in the NBA to start. He's had a really slow start. Got a huge standing ovation when he came in the second quarter. He hit a 3 in the third quarter, and like, the crowd legitimately cheered. And so here's my thing. Like, obviously he was going to get applauded when he came into the game. And Thunder fans, they are really good fans. Like, there's no question. Like, I'm not just stroking the ego of the fan base when I say that. Like, Thunder fans are obviously really good fans. They show up to the arena. They yell the whole time. They're a really passionate fan base. They're obviously a good fan base. But that was weird. cheering when Buddy Hield hit a three in the third quarter against the Thunder, I was kind of weirded out by that. Cheering when he comes into the game is expected and totally fine. Like, every fan base has players who they'll cheer for. And, you know, you expect that. You know, Thunder fans still cheer for Blake Griffin. He hasn't been at OU for, what, 7 years now. So that was, I mean, that's fine. That's normal. I mean, lots of returning players and that kind of stuff, guys who are from places, they'll get cheered. But I don't know if I've ever seen, I definitely don't remember ever seeing a visiting player making a shot against the home team and the crowd audibly cheering for that guy. I was a little, like, I was just weirded out by that. Thought that was a real weird thing, and I get that OU fans love Buddy Hield. OU fans really love Buddy Hield, as they should. He's a good kid, and I shouldn't say kid, he's 22. I think of him as younger than he actually is, but he's almost 23 years old. He's a good guy, and he was obviously an incredible college player. Just absolutely unbelievable last year for that team. And so they should love him. But I don't know, that moment, like, tell me if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong, but that moment just, it wasn't bad. It definitely wasn't bad. There was nothing wrong with it. It just weirded me out. I thought it was a weird thing. It was a weird thing for a fan base to do. I'd never seen that before. Let's talk about some basketball, though. Russell Westbrook tonight. Fifth straight triple-double. Chaotic performance from him. It was not his best triple-double, but, like, apparently he's quite literally getting triple-doubles every other game now. Like, 10 triple-doubles in 21 games. He's legitimately averaging. If and when he has a triple-double Monday night against the Hawks, he'll average a triple-double every other game. He's got 10 triple-doubles. Rest of the league has 11. It's like, it's a crazy thing, but, you know, he was a little chaotic in the game. The Thunder did a really good job getting out on the run in this one. I think Westbrook really contributed to that, but it wasn't just him. They were really pushing. They had definitely their best fast break of the year. They actually, you know what? Now I'm taking that back. Not even their best fast break. That was their best possession of the entire year. And if you don't know what I'm talking about without even having to describe the play, you got to go on Vine or YouTube or Twitter or Facebook or, like, Pinterest or whatever it is that you look at, or ESPN.com or, like, whatever it is, you gotta see this fast break, because it was amazing seeing Russell Westbrook dive onto the floor for a ball, go on his back, sit up with his butt on the ground, throw a pass over his head to Steven Adams, who then threw an immediate touch bounce pass to Victor Oladipo, who then swung it around with one hand for a pocket pass to Andre Roberson, who then dunked it in with two hands. Four guys touched the ball in, I think it was under 3 seconds. All three passes were, like, highlight-worthy passes. It was awesome. It was so cool. And it was a perfect three-man weave, too. Like, it was a perfect fast break. They got out in the run real well. Enes Kanter led a break. They had some of their flashiest breaks, no question. Russell Westbrook had another one of those, like, 40 or 50 feet passes to Andre Roberson, who was leaking out and caught the ball like a wide receiver on a line drive pass from Westbrook. Westbrook throws these chest passes, which are like touchdowns. He throws these chest passes for touchdowns that go 40, 50, 60, 70 feet. And he finds Roberson so well. Like, Roberson, he's like a receiver on those plays. Like, he's kind of built like a receiver, you know, tall and lanky. Like, he's built like, you know, like Randy Moss or something. And it really looks like a football game on those sorts of plays. They've hooked up for passes like that, like, I think 4 times now this year, for ones that just go, like, at least half the length of the court, often more. And that was really an incredible pass from Westbrook. But they ran well. They were flashy. They were cohesive. They shot terribly. They started the game 0 of 16 from 3. They finished 6 of 28. The Pelicans also finished 6 of 28. There was actually a point in this game when the Thunder had, okay, so both teams combined for as many airballed threes as they did made threes, which was amazing. They were like, the Thunder were 0 for 16 from 3, and the Pelicans were 2 for 14. And Buddy Hield had airballed a 3, and Andre Roberson had airballed a 3. It was not a well-shot game, but the Thunder did a good job getting to the rim. That helped them on their two-point shots. Talk about Steven Adams for a second. Steven Adams, rolled over a left ankle. The Thunder called it a left ankle sprain. He didn't return to the game. That happened in the first half, and he didn't come back in. Obviously, huge loss for them in this game, but I thought they still played pretty well defensively. They really maintained. They maintained without Adams, which was a nice performance. No timetable on him right now. We don't know if he's back on Monday or if there's going to be out for some amount of time. As I always say, I promise as soon as I find out any news about Steven Adams, I will let everybody know. But I have no further information on that, so I unfortunately can't tell you anything. But let's take some Twitter questions before we go. First one from Sarah. What are your thoughts on Sabonis and Grant? They seem to get better defensively every game. Yeah, they did. Look, the Thunder bigs did like a pretty good job on Anthony Davis, I thought. And they threw a lot of guys on Anthony Davis. They had Steven Adams on him early. Obviously, that changed when Adams, you know, had to leave the game. They had Sabonis on him a little bit. They had Jeremy Grant on him a little bit. They had Joffrey Laverne on him a little bit. They were throwing a bunch of different defenders, a bunch of different types of defenders in Anthony Davis. I thought those defenders did a pretty good job. Like Anthony Davis, so the shots he was taking, I said this at the top of the show. The shots he was taking are the types of shots the Thunder want him taking. Like many of his shots were just long twos off the dribble. And if you are any defense in the league and you are going up against Anthony Davis, top 10 player, at least top 10 player, absolutely amazing, NBA scoring leader, just an unbelievable player, having the best year of his career. Dude's still 23 years old. I don't understand how, but he's still only 23 years old. I feel like he was 23 years old like 7 years ago. He is already just absolutely unbelievable. When you go up against him with his skill and his athleticism and his just the way he can just kill you, the way he can just kill a defense, if you want him taking one kind of shot, it's long twos off the dribble, right? And that's many of the shots that he took. But I feel like he made every single one of them. It's not really on the Thunder. Like, he was just unbelievable in this game. Sabonis had a really nice block on him when he was going for verticality, and he blocked him. I couldn't believe he blocked him. Jeremy Grant had, like, some nice contests. There was even a point where Davis had an and-one that he scored against Grant. And I was like, you know what? That's a good contest, though. Like, it's Anthony Davis. He had a really nice move, and Grant just kind of moved his arm forward a little bit too much. And, like, it was fine. He stuck with him. I thought Grant did a good job contesting a lot of his shots. He just made a lot of shots because, like, Anthony Davis is really darn good at basketball. I do think Sabonis is getting better on defense. And I do think something that has helped Jeremy Grant's defense of late is that Billy Donovan is playing him at the four more now than he was when Grant first came over to the Thunder. And I've said this all along. The thing about Jeremy Grant is I think he is more naturally a four. I think his skill set fits better as a four. I think he's better when he's defending on the back of the pick and roll, when he's defending the screener on a pick and roll, than when he's defending the ball handler on a pick and roll. I think he's a better defender in that aspect. I think he's great when you can use him as a guy on screens to switch onto a perimeter player as opposed to switch off a perimeter player. I think he's better in those scenarios too. So I like him more as a big, and I think his you know lack of three-point shooting doesn't really hurt you as much when he's a four and when he's a three. And on top of that, as a four, his ball handling is okay. As a three, his ball handling is not bad, but he's not really a guy who's going to make a move off the dribble. He'll take you to the hole, but he's not quite going to make a move off the dribble or facilitate shots for other people or anything like that. And as a four, I think his ball handling is better suited for playing the four than he is for the three. So I do think he's more of a four, but the problem is the Thunder don't really have threes. That's their weakest position. And they got a ton of big men. They got four big men already aside from Jeremy Grant. They got Laverne, and they got Adams, and they got Kanter, and they got Sabonis. But when Adams went down, he was able to play more four. He's been playing more four lately, and I think that's helped his defense. I think he's been able to defend pick and rolls more comfortably because of that. I think he's played some pretty decent defense in the post against long guys. I think he's done he's an above average defender, I think, and he's done a good job. He uses his athleticism well. He's real bouncy. I think he's done a good job. I think that helps. I think Sabonis is more disciplined now. I do think he's more disciplined now. He's far from great. You'll find him out of place a lot. And the thing is, he's not long, so he's already kind of, he comes in disadvantaged to a degree. But he's definitely done a better job rotating within the defense and helping and that kind of stuff than he was doing at the start of the year. But as with any rookie, he has a way to go. He's a really good team defender for a rookie, for sure. But he's got a decent way to go. From JJ Santos, can Russ keep putting these monster stats up, putting up these monster stats on a consistent basis. I kind of think he can. I'm kind of at the point now, I don't know if he's going to finish with 40 triple-doubles because that's just outrageous. He had 18 last year, and it was tied for the most of anybody since, like, Oscar, right? I mean, look, I'm sure he's going to break that. But, like, I don't think he's going to get to 40. I don't even know if he's going to get to 30. But this is amazing, and I do think he's going to continue resembling these numbers the rest of the year. Like, you know, we talk about, is he going to burn himself out? And I don't want to make it seem like I don't think he's using up a lot of energy. He obviously is. But we never asked that question. And I don't remember if I've made this point on this podcast or on the radio or like in just casual conversations. We never asked this question with like Kawhi Leonard, who does the same thing on defense that Russell Westbrook does on offense. And still obviously plays a major role on the offensive end. Russell Westbrook is... It's not like he's going nuts on every single defensive possession. There are times throughout a game where he rests. And it's okay because he's so great offensively. You can't go a million miles an hour in every single aspect of the game. You just can't do it. No one can do it. You got to pick your spots. And there are certain things that Russell Westbrook does which are kind of beyond picking your spots, and I get that. It's what makes him a flawed defensive player, right? When he hits a screen and just kind of dies on it or... the gambling on the defensive end, or maybe when he switches, you know, messes up on a, you know, someone messes up on a switch, not always him, but someone will mess up on a switch and he'll end up just kind of drifting and not really guarding a guy throughout a possession, or doesn't always close out. Like there are lots of ways to critique the defense, but there are possessions where he's not going nuts on the defensive end. And he's doing it on offense, but with Kawhi Leonard, he's going nuts on every defensive possession. That's not as obvious. So we don't ask ourselves, can Kawhi Leonard sustain this defense for the whole year? Yeah, he can. And he has for a few years. I think Russell Westbrook can sustain this. I really do. Whether he's going to average a triple-double. I look, at the start of the year, I laughed at people for asking that. I thought it was preposterous that anyone would even like assume that. Like, no one's going to average a triple-double. And now... obviously, I was just horribly wrong. Like, it's pretty... wouldn't I have to be so full of myself to admit, like, no, man, I was totally right. He's going to average 7.5 rebounds now this year. He's averaging, like, 11 now. Like, I was, like, comically wrong. It was obviously more than a legitimate question and prediction. And I didn't see this coming. I don't blame myself for it, but I didn't see this coming. And I do think he can keep it up. Just because we haven't seen any evidence that says that he can't. And that dude is determined as all hell. So I'm just going to say that he can. And if he doesn't, whatever. I'm wrong again. I lived through the first time. I'll live through the next. Finally, from Lewis Green. How are the Thunder going to deal with Dwight Howard if Steven Adams is not available? So we'll talk about the Hawks a little. The Thunder play the Hawks on Monday night. The Hawks have struggled lately. This is a team, so let's check this out, because I don't know this off the top of my head. I should, but I apologize. I don't. The Hawks are now 10-11. They're 10-11. They've lost 9 out of 10 games. They lost 6 in a row. This is a defense. It's still a really highly ranked defense. The offense is really low. We don't know. I will reiterate this. We don't know that Steven Adams is not playing against the Hawks. We do not know this. But here's where the Thunder benefit a little bit. The Hawks are good because they're a really good defensive team. Or I shouldn't say the Hawks are 10-11, so they're not playing great. By any means, they lost 6 in a row. But the Hawks' strength is their defense. And they're really struggling offensively. Kent Bazemore is having a really down year. Dwight Howard hasn't been quite as good as he was in that first like few weeks of the season of late. The bench has not been as good. As it was in, you know, these past years. But the Hawks, when they win games, it's because of their defense. So the Hawks are number 2 right now in defensive efficiency. They're 27 in offensive efficiency. That's points per 100 possessions and points allowed per 100 possessions. So this is about as extreme a team as you're going to come. But in terms of the effect of Steven Adams' effect is way more on the defensive end. Now, where the Hawks can hurt you is like with the Dwight Howard pick and roll. And let's not forget about Paul Millsap, obviously. I mean, Millsap, most underrated player in the NBA. he's been a multi-time All-Star right now, so it's hard to say he's the most underrated player in the NBA, but he really might be the most underrated player still. Like, I don't think people realize how good he is offensively, how skilled he is with the ball. He can shoot, he can take you off the dribble, he can face you up, he's versatile. I mean, he's awesome. He's one of the best power forwards out there. He should be mentioned in the conversation with you know, the Davises and the Cousins and the, you know, I don't know if you consider Cousins a center or power forward, but all the best power forwards out there, the Blake Griffins and all of them, like, his name is in there solidly. He's not a very good player. He's a great player. So he deserves to be mentioned in this conversation, and he's good at the rim. But this is an offense, though, that, you know, if they don't have Steven Adams, they can still put up a solid enough defensive performance. The issue for them is going to be trying to score on the other side of the ball, because this is a Hawks defense that's really, really, really good. A lot of that having to do with Millsap, obviously, who's such a versatile defender. A lot of that having to do with Howard, who, you know, is not as great as he was in his prime, but is still a good defensive player, no question, and Dennis Schroeder and a lot of other guys who can defend on that team. If Adams doesn't play, and again, don't know that's not going to happen. Don't know if that's going to happen or not. But if Adams doesn't play, it depends on who they start. I don't know if they're going to start LaVerne or if they're going to start Enes Kanter. I don't know if you want to start Enes Kanter and Domantas Sabonis next to each other. I don't know if you want to do that defensively. I think Kanter works nicer off the bench. I think Kanter gets more minutes if Adams doesn't play. But, you know, LaVerne started the second half on Sunday night against the Pelicans when Adams was out. So I think it's real possible that you see LaVerne start and maybe even Kanter get more minutes. But if Adams is out, I think it's possible you would see LaVerne start in that game. Just judge based on what Billy Donovan was doing on Sunday night. But this would be a nice matchup for the Thunder without Adams. I think they could truck through Atlanta, even on the second night of a back-to-back, just because of the way Atlanta is comprised. And then the Thunder have 3 days off before they have to play their next opponent. Now, their next opponent, that's the one that hurts you without Steven Adams, because that's the Houston Rockets. The Thunder are a team that is put together maybe more reliant on one player on one side of the ball and another player on another side of the ball. Maybe more reliant than any other team in the league. Obviously, that guy on offense is Russell Westbrook. And that guy on defense is Steven Adams. And if you don't have Steven Adams, there is a massive drop-off. Whoever it is, whether it's LaVerne, whether it's Kanter, there is a massive drop-off on the defensive end. It's something that really would hurt them. Now, we don't know what it is. If we find out news on Adams, then that's something that I will talk about for, you know, an extended period of time in the next podcast. But I didn't want to dwell too much on it in this podcast just because we don't necessarily know what it is. And I didn't want to waste everybody's time in case Adams plays on Monday night or misses one game and then is back Friday or whatever it is. Before we go, remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, and you can head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Love of your life, the ultimate reconnaissance mission. But you did it, and you want to protect the life you've built together through thick and thin. Be their protector for life with life insurance from USAA.
Call 1-800-531-LIFE for a quote.